though, when you try and find the right fit for you and your family and you just can't. The community around you doesn't have the capacity to support you. Have you looked maybe yourself for the right school and it just doesn't exist, or the right place for the care of your aging parents? We've really heard, I think, too much about how difficult it is to get the support that you need when you're looking for the right type of care. So our next guest tried hard to find the right school for his child with Asperger's. And then when he couldn't, he rolled up his sleeves, and that's right, he built his own school. Steve Anthony, it's easy to say a sentence like, and he built his own school, but even, you know, a highly resourced government struggles to always do that successfully. Take us back and tell us about your son and his needs at the time that you made that decision.
Good afternoon, Jacinta. Well, it's not accurate to say that we built our own school, but my son Patrick, who has autism, was one of 12 students that started a school called Giant Steps in Gladesville in Sydney in 1995, and six families got together and worked to establish a school, which now has over 100 students and many services catering for adults, including Patrick. Patrick's now 29, and preschool children and a medical clinic. And we also opened a school in Melbourne, which is now in its fourth year. So it's not accurate to say that I started the school, but it is fair to say that that we started the school. And more recently, now that some of our children are adults, we've started another organisation called Silk, which is a cooperative that helps families establish supported accommodation homes for their adult children with disabilities.
And the we is a very important part of this story, isn't it? Because we're talking about collective effort today. The we in this instance, is that the work that you may have done with Melina Morrison, who's basically the CEO of a business council of cooperatives and mutuals. Good morning to you, or good afternoon, Melina.
Good afternoon, Jacinta.
Now, when we talk about cooperatives like this, as Steve has just mentioned, it's not usually an I that starts something, it's a we. How does a cooperative like a school begin?
What's really interesting when you focus on the we is that it's actually a way of bringing together everyone's personal needs, their own self-interest, but into a collective way of working. So the I is expressed through the we. And it happens in much of the way that Steve described. People come together who share a common need, an aspiration. Perhaps it's actually an injustice. It could be a market failing them. And they identify that in order to get what they need for themselves, they need to work together. And it's through their collaboration and actually their solidarity that they're able to achieve their aspirations.
So, Steve, in your case, when you were finding that collective, how did you go about it? Was it that you had families in your network that were experiencing the same issues that you were?
Exactly. So, actually, a gentleman called Rob Llewellyn Jones started the initiative. He was the founder of Giant Steps, and he gathered a group of families, including us, that had similar needs. And he'd heard about a school in Montreal in Canada called Giant Steps that was running a world-class school for children with autism. And so we group of families got together and decided to do what we could to establish one in Australia. In fact, one was established in Tasmania, which is also still going, at the same time that we started in Sydney. And in fact, if you're probably not old enough to remember Andrew Olley, but Andrew Olley was an ABC presenter who played a pivotal role by interviewing Rob Llewellyn Jones at the time to, you know, get things rolling, to get Giant Steps underway. And the thing about schools are you can't have a school for one child. And with the disability housing, it's not economically efficient to have a house for one person either. So our homes typically accommodate two or three residents, people with disabilities, which is a much better arrangement than what used to happen in the old days, where group homes would typically accommodate, you know, 5 to 10 people without any involvement of parents. And what we argued successfully, was that where it's practical, it's better to involve the families in the accommodation, support accommodation for their adult children, because the families know and understand the needs of their children. And that's the model, that the cooperative model was an ideal legal structure to do that in, because in a cooperative, it's not one share, one vote, it's one person, one vote, and all the money stays within the cooperative. So if somebody leaves the house or leaves a cooperative, then whatever assets the cooperative have continues for the next person that moves into the cooperative or the house in our case.
This is such a fascinating part of what was built beyond the school, which is what you're describing now, which is kind of home care cooperatives. Melita, can you explain to us, as Steve was just starting to do, what a cooperative model looks like when it comes to housing?
Well, the model that Steve has described is a model in which the owners, the co-owners of the housing and the housing solution, so this is also the services that are supplied to the people living in the houses, that's consumer-owned. People have come together, they've pooled their NDIS budgets, if you like, and they are collaborating through joining up their capital and their needs. So they created an internal market for themselves. There are different types of members in cooperatives. They can be consumers in this case, but they can also be workers. So another example, which is emerging particularly in this disability and aged care space, is workers coming together who want to deliver high quality, consistent care to people who are living in their homes, and they own the enterprise which is delivering their care. So if you like, they're all renting out their labour, but they don't have to go through an intermediary. They themselves own the business which is delivering this care, so they're really empowered to do that. There's a wonderful example here in Sydney called This Cooperative Life, and it's growing because the people, the consumers getting the care, actually want this very high quality, consistent and highly professional care.
And Jacinta, my son Patrick lives in a house with two other young men called Douglas and Hayden. And they were three of the 12 original students at Giant Steps in 1995. And in their house, the members of the cooperative are not just the parents, but any staff member that's worked for the house for more than 12 months can be and is a member, which means that they have a say in what happens in the house. And so enjoy working at the house, and we have very low turnover of staff, which means that the support that our sons get is, you know, from people who understand how to communicate with our sons, care about our sons, and like working where they're working. So it's a really good model that we find works very well, and because it's worked well in that house, then other families have decided that they'd like to adopt a similar model, and that's how Silk came into being. So Silk's actually a cooperative of 12 cooperatives.
Well, and I want to hear from both of you about this, because the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of cooperatives is how complex it is to run a system where everyone's got a vote. I mean, you think about community organisations, and often they come with them difficulty, I suppose, because there's no real clear hierarchy around them. How have you encountered situations like that? I guess firstly to you, Steve, in terms of the school and then the homes. What complexities have you faced?
It's not a problem because there's a complete alignment of objectives, right? If everybody is wanting to achieve the best outcomes for their, in our case, their children, then they're all enthusiastic about actively being involved for the common good. So what cooperative is about cooperation, and cooperation means that team produces a better outcome than the sum of the individual players in the team. So we have, and you know, Giants Test has been going for 24 years, and I really can't recall any instance of tension amongst the families, because it's everyone's working for the common good.
That's incredible though, Steve, because we've even seen it, I guess, across our country, in that of course there's always this good intention of common good, but we often see it from different perspectives. Good is subjective, I suppose. How do you ensure that you've got, you know, that really clear from the outset? Melina, I suppose to you, is that part of how you set up a successful cooperative?
Well, absolutely. The magic ingredient here is this is not loose cooperation. Of course, people are cooperating in that broader behavioural sense, but cooperatives are a legal model. You have a constitutional business arrangement, and it has this very important thing in it, which you decide at the beginning, which is the active membership test. What are you going to do to be an active, engaged member of the cooperative in order to receive a benefit back? And it's that reciprocity, which is embedded in the legal model itself, which actually creates the structure that allows for effective decision making. I'm going to suggest an example here that we can explore of a much larger cooperative, just to illustrate that this works at all different levels. So in Victoria, the RACV, for example, is a cooperative of motoring, of motorists. You don't think of this when you take out your roadside assistance with the RACV, but in fact you are gaining in exchange for your membership one vote as a democratic co-owner of that very large cooperative. Now you as a motorist are not making all of the decisions of the business. You're not asked to, you know, pass judgment on a marketing brochure or something like that. You're not engaged in that way because it's delegated management. Depending on the scale of the cooperative, and some are very large and some are more intimate and smaller and more community level, it is the same wonderful legal structure, but just like any business, it has to have delegated authority. Usually this is managed through democratic governance through the board. So member directors sitting on the board are the delegated decision makers, and in turn the management that they hire to actually run the business. But the thing that Steve talked about at the very beginning is that the interests are aligned, and that is documented in the business model itself.
And so in addition to the suitability of the legal structure, when the consumers, to use Melina's term, or the parents, to use my term, find that the lives of their children and their lives are dramatically improved by the existence of the school or the house, then they're very grateful and keen to make it work. So you need good leadership. The bigger the organisation, obviously. So, you know, Giant Steps is now a school with 139 staff and, you know, 100 and something children in the two schools in Sydney and Melbourne. You need good leadership to keep people singing from the same songbook, and fortunately we've had that. But it's most powerful motivator is that the people with disabilities and their families can very obviously see the benefits which are coming from the model, and so they're enthusiastic to support it.
We're speaking with Steve Anthony and Melina Morrison, CEO of Business Council of Cooperatives and Mutuals, about cooperatives. Have you been in a situation where it hasn't worked for you to go and find services, you know, through government or wherever? You've had to start your own thing. 1-300-800-222 is the phone number. That's part of the issue, isn't it, Steve, is that you were in a situation where you had to, because there weren't appropriate services around, initially with schooling for your child with Asperger's, so you had to do it yourself. Is a cooperative a result of a failure of other important services to be doing what they should be doing?
I wouldn't put it that way, exactly. And now, fortunately, since Giant Steps was started and since Power Cooperative was established, the NDIS, National Disability Insurance Scheme, has come into play, and that has been a massive help in terms of us establishing these homes and having the money to make them work successfully.
Now, the home model is very interesting, and I'm really interested to sort of dig down into it right now because, as you said, Steve, you started one about 8 years ago for your son. There's a co-op home where Douglas and Hayden also join Patrick in there, and those families all have a share in the running of that home. This model has been duplicated and replicated beyond disability housing and now looking at aged care as well. Tell us about that.
I'm not qualified to comment on aged care. I'm sorry. I'm almost old enough to live in one of them, but I wouldn't like to comment beyond my area of knowledge. So excuse me if I don't answer that.
Not a worry at all. Melina, for you, can you see potential that these models of home care can be duplicated into other environments like aged care?
Well, absolutely. And Steve is being modest, but there's a lot of people that are very interested in the model that's been set up through the supported independent living cooperative. We've been approached with people who are looking at their retirement and aged care solutions. They can use exactly the same model, which is to come together and try and find a common housing solution. It might even be pooling what could be potentially quite a large amount of capital to build some sort of housing development that allows them all to live independently but together. The other element to this, and what's really strong in the model that's working with Steve's network, is that you're able to create a market for the services that the people living in the homes need, and that creates enough of a market, if you like, to be able to have really long-term and sustainable care delivered. Lots of people are thinking about what they want to do when they become older, when they go into the sort of aged bracket, and a lot of people say, I don't want to end up in a home, or I don't want to go into a traditional sort of retirement facility. Actually, it's really hard to organise other ideas unless you think of ways of cooperating with people.
I've already earmarked some friends that I have said we must be living together when we reach that point. We're joined now by Heidi, who has an experience of going to Giant Steps. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. My eldest son, Liam, went to Giant Steps in the preschool component, and he was diagnosed as a child with autism, which, when that diagnosis comes through, it feels like he's drowning. Now, some people will go out and swim and help your kid, and some people will send you a boat, but Giant Steps did the equivalent of draining the river to help my son. They were astounding.
And what was it about this model that was successful for you and your son, Heidi?
It was so completely broad. They had occupational therapists on site. They had music therapists. They had teachers who understood his autism. I did not have to teach people how to help my son. They taught me. They taught me how to speak autism. It was exceptional. And he went from a child who the mainstream system told us he would need to be in a special school for the rest of his life. He is now a child who, with support, is in a selected school for gifted children.
That is, what a wonderful reflection on that. Heidi, thank you very much for joining us this morning. This afternoon, I should say. Sorry. Heidi, did you have something else?
Yeah. The serious upside of this is this child will pay tax. He will get a job. He is going to save. Giant Steps has saved the government so much money by helping us help him to achieve what he was capable of. So he will be a kid who lives independently and who has a job, and it's because of them.
Heidi, thank you again for sharing that. Steve, it must be wonderful to hear that sort of reflection for something that that long ago you established with, a group of like-minded families.
Absolutely.
I do wonder, though, Steve, and we talk about sort of the pressures that are on families when they're dealing with family members with disability, and even when we're talking about the aged care world, how do you you then find that next bit of capacity to do what you have done with Giant Steps and then again with the home care model, to be organizing and running and doing that? It takes an enormous amount of energy.
Well, there's a huge difference between what you can do when you're left with, you know, two or in some cases one parent having to look after their child with a disability 24/7, and when, as Heidi just said, you've got a school like Giant Steps or a home like the Silk Homes where their lives are being taken care of by really quality people for most of the time. And the trick is, and this is really sort of important element in the Silk model and the Giant Steps model, is that you want the families involved as well as the organisation, because it's the combined effort that produces the best outcomes for the people with disabilities, and their families benefit as a result of that. So, you know, I have plenty of energy to help other families with children with disabilities because Giant Steps and more recently Silk has given me the time to do that. And that's a self-reinforcing arrangement, that as other families experience the same positive thing, then they're enthusiastic to help other people. And that makes a big difference to schemes like the NDIS, because if the NDIS had to 100% fund the support that need to be given with people with disabilities, the cost to the taxpayer would be too great. But working in cooperation with the families, the NDIS refers to them as informal supports. So the families cost nothing in terms of dollars, but the combined efforts from the families and other people in the community, on top of the funding that enables from the NDIS that enables employees to be paid well enough, means that you get the best outcomes for everybody.
Steve, Anthony, thank you very much for joining us today. It's eye-opening to hear the experience that you've had with the co-op model in the way that you've rolled it out. If people are interested, they can get onto the Supporting Independent Living Cooperatives website or Silk. Steve Anthony is the pro bono CEO of Silk. And Melina Morrison, thank you very much for joining us as well, CEO of Business Council of Cooperatives and Mutuals, a much broader access there that you can get if you're interested in co-ops. Thank you to both of you for joining us this afternoon. It's coming up right now to News Time. It's 1 o'clock.